Hi, and welcome to Ohio Martial Arts Mind Power. This is part two with our interview with Pedro Sauer, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Black Belt Coach Jim Bundy. I hope you enjoy. First of all, I want to welcome you again, Coach Bundy, for being on with us today. I'm real excited to get a chance to talk to you. In our last conversation, we talked a lot about your personal history, some of your influences, and then also we talked about your philosophy towards martial arts. Everybody thought it was stellar. The feedback I got was just incredible. So what I thought I'd do, we kind of ended our last conversation with kind of turning a corner and starting to move into more of your mindset and how mindset really affects everything. And one of the things that was towards the end of our last talk is you talked a little bit about how Tony Robbins had been a big influence on you. And, you know, we used to go to big martial arts events, and every time you'd really come across somebody that was really living a pretty high level, almost the most logical question you could ask is, well, at what point did you come across Tony Robbins? Kind of a universal thing. So what would you, in your mind, would be a couple of things, that very first set of tapes? I think you said that was your first set of tapes. What did that influence do for you, and how does that even affect you to this day?
Sure. I think that, you know, when I first came up, you know, across that type of material, I was, I'd say 19, 20 years old. And my martial arts instructor, and I was, you know, working for him at the time. I eventually, you know, bought the school from him, as I alluded to in our last conversation. But he gave me, you know, gave me some tapes at that time. And there had been nothing in my life, I should say, prior to that, that made me think outside the box, that made me be introspective, that made me want to think why I think or how I think, or try to have this goal-oriented, you know, type of mindset. Now, that doesn't mean that I wasn't goal-oriented. And what I mean by that is, like, I've always been a go-getter, right? Like, I've been the kind of person that was going to work hard, not work. I've always had that chip on my shoulder, but I was never around anybody that was had that super successful, let's just call it, mindset, right? Like, think like this and think big and, you know, do more with your life and so on and so on. And I didn't grow up like that. You know, my parents, you know, were economically not, you know, high level. You know, we were a poor family. It doesn't mean they weren't good people, right? I grew up around a lot of really good people, but they're just, they just weren't go to that next level type of mindset. And I didn't think that was something I was even capable of doing. Like, you hear about someone being successful or doing well in their life or whatever, and the only way I thought that myself or somebody, like, you know, could do something, that, well, you're gonna have to be a doctor, or you're gonna have to be, you know, like a lawyer or something, so that way maybe you can do something good with your life and financially also be successful and so on and so on. And when I got a hold of these tapes, it was the only time in my life that I was had to figure out why I thought the way I thought, how to think different, how to deal with myself, and really just expand my thinking just in general. And so that started a whole cascade of, you know, throughout my 20s, I affectionately say that I didn't go to college, that I didn't, but I got my college education at Borders. Because, you know, throughout my early 20s, you know, I was some of that type of stuff. I'm not saying I was following it. I'm not saying that I was able to apply it, but I think it's more, I would, you know, quit it. Just, it was planting the seeds, right? Like, there was the seed planted that there's more that you can do and so on and so on. And it started this process of, I want to learn. I don't want to just know what you're telling me is true. I want to know if it's true. I want to research it. I want to feel comfortable about what I think and what I feel and why I think and feel that way. And it also started getting me in this thought process of, who are the kind of people that I'm going to need to be around and the kind of information I'm going to need to be around to be more successful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, awesome. And so I think that starting this idea of, you know, personal development, whether it's Tony Robbins, whoever somebody would, you know, link into, right? It starts this idea of, number one, I need to educate myself. because when I do, I'm doing better and I'm capable of more. And then it's a snowball, right? Because capable of, then the more you think you're capable of, because you start doing more and you start achieving more and you start accomplishing some things. And then secondarily, to your point, you know, when you're around high successful people, you know, everybody kind of listens to Tony Robbins, right? So that means that those type of people do those types of things, meaning they're around that information. That's why they win. So I had to start understanding that if I was going to get better and think better and have a higher level of, you know, success, I was going to have to get around people that thought like that, because if I didn't, I would get convinced that it wasn't possible.
Right. That's huge. Yeah. I'm one of the early influences in my life was actually both times it was on the same trip. I was going to a martial art event in Phoenix. And so I get on this airplane and there's a guy sitting right across the aisle from me. And I didn't know who the guy was, but I won't mention his name, but you would know who the guy was. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know. But something about his presence, like I knew he was somebody. He was fit, but it wasn't that he was fit. He was just exuding this confidence, this power.
Sure.
And then sure enough, I get out there and yep, there he is. Okay. Yeah, he is a big deal, but I had no idea. He was just wearing, you know, regular clothing.
Sure.
But then I get back on the airplane to go back and I'm thinking, wow, this is great. You know, this is amazing. And then I end up sitting right across from this guy who's a paraplegic.
Mm.
And so it was nice because we struck up a conversation and I kind of made friends with him, helped him with a few things that he needed. And I realized this paraplegic guy is exuding the exact same power.
Mm.
And I said to myself, man, it ain't just punching and the kicking.
Sure.
Because this one guy ain't doing any punching and kicking soon.
For sure.
And you would maybe even know that guy's name too. Again, I won't mention that. But my point is that I began to really think in terms of martial arts affecting people in ways that go beyond just the physical. And that was a big influence in my own life. And so I know you live by some of those principles as well.
For sure.
So tell me a little bit about, like, if you were to convince yourself as a person, what would be your top two or three principles that you live by that are just kind of part of your mindset? And I remember in our last conversation, you talked a little bit about, you know, once you've established this is who I am, it just affects how you react to everything.
Sure.
So can you talk a little bit about your own principles?
I think that the underlying thing for me, and especially like for you and I, you know, with everything that's been going on now and the things that have been going on with our schools and our businesses and, you know, the fear and frustration, you know, that has come along with this, you know, thing, you know, the situation that we have no control over, and it's affecting everyone in terrible ways, and it's affecting, of course, our businesses and life in general, right? So the one thing that I know, there's two things I would say. Number one, I've had many times in my life as a younger guy where I just wasn't succeeding, you know, as a young business person. You know, I use that term loosely, by the way. I wasn't a business person when I was in my 20s. I was a kid who taught martial arts, who could pretend to be a business person. But if you would say, well, what do you think a business person is? Well, I wasn't that. You know, if you would define that was not me. But for, you know, I think that the thing that I know about myself, and this gets back to the mindset, right? Like the mental toughness that martial arts helps people bring out within themselves, because when you're pushed and challenged physically, it brings out this part of your personality inside that says, well, I can't quit. And you learn not to quit, even though everything is telling you that you should. Your body's exhausted or hurt or what have you. And you have this little voice that says, okay, yeah, I want to quit. And eventually you learn to have this other voice that says, yeah, but what if you stuck it out a little bit longer? And I've had multiple experiences with that through my training, through my fighting experience. And sometimes you do quit to learn how to not quit, right? Like you get beaten down and you are, that's it, I'm throwing in the towel. And then somehow, some way you get back up off your feet. So I would say the number one thing for me is I have a I'm going to figure it out attitude, even when I don't think I can. But I'd also say that you have to have a team around you. And I have, you know, like my wife in this past scenario, she's my teammate. So when I don't feel like I can go on, she can throw me a line and remind me that I can. You know, it's because we're going to forget. You know, it's like when you get to, you know, I'm about as focused and as a positive person as I think I'm going to find. And I'm not trying to sound that in a jerky kind of way, but because I work on my mindset, right? I read a lot. I study a lot. Yeah. I try to put myself around the right type of people, information. So that way I can rework my head. That's what I always call, you know, when I'm having a bad day, I typically have a bad day for a couple days. it's like if something's really, really gnawing at me, I'm not a get over it in 2 hour guy. I fester. But I know that if a day or two goes by of me being really angry, somehow, some way I get in my head and I rework it. It takes me a little bit of time, but I know that I have that skill set. So what I would say to anybody is you have to find a way to rely on yourself to know that no matter what, you'll figure something out. And if you have enough, if you do that enough and you start figuring some things out and, you know, fandangling things together and you're like, oh, and you look back on your life, you're like, man, I don't know how I pulled that off. And I've had many of those situations. Right. Like when I was younger, I've had many situations just, you know, from a financial point of view, like, I don't know how I paid that bill. I don't know how I fandangled that. I'm not really sure how I kept the lights on. And I look back at those moments, like, as I'm thinking a few in my head and I'm like, how did I do that? You know, but I just somehow in my head was like, well, I'm going to have to figure it out. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, and again, my wife reminded me of this just this week, but you can't do it by yourself. You know, you can figure things out. You will figure things out, but you also have to have people that are on your side that support you. So that way, you know, you can work through things and you don't have to just do it on your own. You know, you know, I always felt like, well, I can do it. I can do it. And I can, but we need help too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I always tell people that's one of the big pluses of a dojo, good dojo community, is because, you know, there's days when you don't feel like training, but man, as long as you get in that community, you'll feel like changing training.
Yeah, the people around you make such a big influence, positively or negatively, and that's why if I pedal back for a second to your question that I don't know that I answered quite well, it's like if the one or two things is, number one, learn to have that ability to go, I'm just not going to quit. And number two, surround yourself with people that help you keep that mission intact. You know?
Absolutely.
Don't quit and have people around you that support you through the tough times. So that way you can always get up on your feet.
Yeah. No.
That's what being in a good dojo is about, right? Because the reality is, you know, there's lots of things that are good for us that sometimes we just don't feel like doing for 1,000 reasons. But when you have people that count on you, or people that support you, or people that throw you a message, hey, Joe, you know, I haven't seen you at the dojo lately. And you're like, oh, man, you know, I better get my butt to the dojo. You know, like that support system is huge. And that's like what's why I feel like for kids, you know, it's like if you think about sometimes, you know, and I'm sure you've experienced this, you know, in your life of teaching too, Joe, it's like, you know, maybe some kids are coming from situations at home, you know, where they don't have a huge support system, you know, maybe they just don't. And maybe when they go to martial arts or they have a good mentor, you know, they finally have a support system. They finally have someone that's encouraging them, that makes them feel like they're worth something and they want to strive to be better, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not saying, I mean, we have a lot of, we amazing families at our school. I'm sure you do too. And I'm not trying to say that they have bad parenting or this or that. It's just, you know, the thing of it is, you know, kids and adults, we need support systems. And sometimes the dojo either A, is another support system on top of what they already have, or B, maybe it's a supplement when they didn't really have it. You know, maybe you have an adult that comes to your school and they grew up in a situation where their family just didn't support them, or maybe it was abusive, or gosh knows whatever happened terrible in their life. And now they're 20 to 30 years old, and they're like, man, I ain't never had anybody in my life treat me like this. And it turns their whole life
around. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, and that's, you know, that's the problem that folks sometimes get into, is they'll say, well, you know, I need people to support me, but I don't have anybody in my life, and I'm going through a tough time, and da-da-da. And what we always say is, well, then just get in. Your only job then is just get in the dojo. Don't worry about anything else. Just open those doors, get in the dojo, and just watch what happens.
Well,
to
that point, that's a great point, sir. But and my addendum to that would be, you know, if we get back to the just don't quit, I think it's like, well, what can you do that's just one thing you can do? You know, you're in survival mode sometimes, right? It's like, well, what's something I can do? The world is crumbling around me. Is there something I actually can do? Because I think that for most of us, and I can definitely speak for me, when I feel hopeless, it's because I don't feel like I can do something about it. But as soon as I feel like I can at least do something, I have a fragment of energy that says, okay, well, at least I can do this, and it makes me feel better. I have some semblance of some kind of control over the uncontrollable environment that's around me.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. Well, and it was really funny because right after, you know, this for everyone, but you know, restaurants and bars but for also what we do, we got hit so rapidly, so quickly. And I remember I had a conversation with you like the day of the closings. And you just exemplified so much power and so much. I mean, you had hit the ground running, and then you gave that little talk that you put up on Facebook, which as I was running to the dojo, I listened to and inspired me. And it was about what is the cure for fear?
Action.
The cure is action. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. That gets down to that no quit, you know, like, you know, when something hits me and I'm really frustrated and angry or depressed or annoyed about something, what I've learned about myself is I need that festering time. I can't just flick that off like a switch. I don't know who does or doesn't have that ability. I'm not a brush it off the shoulders kind of person. You know, it just, it lingers on me. But what that also allows me to do is it gets out of my system. Like, if I'm going to be mad about it, I can be mad about it for 48 hours. I'm just not going to be mad about this for 48 days. I'm not going to let this linger, because it's going to destroy me. So if I'm going to be mad,
yes, sir.
All right, let's get it out of the way. I'm furious. I can't control this. I'm hyper upset. And then that gets me to a spot where I can breathe and go, okay, I need to do something. Because if I do something, I'm going to feel less fearful. I'm going to feel less frustrated. Because if you think about the times that we feel the most fearful is when we don't have something we're looking at. Like, we don't know. It's too uncertain ahead of us. You know, and when this stuff all happened, you know, that was, it's like, well, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to my school? What's going to happen to my business? What's going to happen to these people? What's going to happen to everybody, right? And then it's like, okay, well, let's get an action plan together. Okay, let's accept that this has happened, and let's get an action plan. You know, earlier in the week, I had a little bit of a meltdown, right? It's like, man, you know, this is dragging out. I don't know what we're going to do, you know? And Shannon, you know, again, back to that support system. She kind of, you know, kicked me in the tush a little bit. You know, I was pretty upset. Give me a little kick in the tush. But then I got my brain working. Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And as soon as I click on, well, this is what I'm going to do. And I think that everybody can relate to that, right? Like, you know, when you're upset about something, you go, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, let's take like a tragedy off of it. Like, just you're indecisive. I don't know what I'm going to do. Should I go to school? Should I get this job? Should I go this way? Should I go that way? And when you don't know what you want to do, you feel like frustrated and lost. But then think about it. Like something hits you. You're like, nope, you know what? I'm going to do this. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do. And like, think of how we talk to ourselves. That is exactly what I'm going to do. And as soon as you say it, you feel confident. You feel relaxed. You feel focused because you have a plan. So my yes. thought is, I don't think anyone should be naive enough to say they're not going to get sad, angry, frustrated, or depressed. I think no one should be naive enough to say they don't need help when they're at their lowest points, because we all need help. And I struggle with that just as much as anybody. And once you get through that phase of I'm angry, all right, well, what can I do? I'm going to write it down. I'm going to jot it down. And now I'm going to do something. You can't just think it. You got to do it.
Sir.
And as soon as you start taking some action, you feel in control again. And so the way to fight fear is you got to do something. If you don't like what's coming at you, all right. Well, what's the choices? Sit there and take all the punishment, or get up and swing? You know, we have to get to a spot where, and it might, in my case, it's sometimes 2-3 day process, but it's like, dude, you know, I'm going to sit here. I'm not going to just let the life just smash me. I have to do something. I don't know what, maybe for some people, like nowadays with everything that's going on with jobs and whatnot, maybe that just means someone just gonna have to get a different job or do a different thing. But they have to have a plan.
Right.
But that plan, you know, it's like, well, maybe they didn't want to do it. Okay, that's fine. I'm going to do it anyway. I got a plan. Yes. I'm going to do it.
Yes, sir.
So fear gets smashed by action every time.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, it's funny. I have one of my teachers says, and they say it a completely different way, but they're saying the exact same thing. They say, you know, you can't make a wrong decision. However, make a decision and then line up.
Yeah.
And once you make a decision to line up, because how many times have we done something? And if you look back on it, which you shouldn't look back on it, but if you look back and you say, well, I guess at that time it was a mistake. But then that mistake, because you made it, realized the mistake, and then you were able to advance around it, and you ended up in a better position.
Sure.
And I mean, I would just say candidly that no one would ever have families or children or anything if we always waited for the right time.
It's so true. So true, Sensei. And hold on, I'm plugging my phone. I'm reminded of, an excerpt of a book that I like, and I know that I mentioned to you that, when I mention things I like, it's just what I like. You know, see, people can look at it, not look at it, hate it, love it, doesn't matter. You know, I like, there's a book, 10X, by Grant Cardone, one of my favorite books. And he says the worst thing you can do is no action. Like, that's the worst thing. It's like, there's all kinds of levels of action, and no action is one of them. Like, that's the least one you want. You know, so even if you start taking some actions, even if some of them are wrong, at least you're doing things, because like to your point, those actions help you figure out better and more correct actions. No action's not going to let anything. It's back to martial arts, right? If you and I are doing jiu-jitsu, and we talked about this the last time, and we have a playful, experimental way we spar and train as the bulk of what we do, so we can learn and grow and our partners can learn and grow. It's safer, it's more fun, it's more engaging, right? It's hyper intellectual, exchange. But if I'm thinking about doing a technique on you, the reason I wouldn't do it would be because I don't want to lose. That's the only reason. Absolutely. If it's a practice session and it's not for your life, if it's a practice session, the only reason you wouldn't try something is either A, you think you'll get hurt, and that's a different conversation because now you have bad training partners. So if you think you're going to get hurt, you need to think about the people you're around. So that would be number one. So if we remove injury from that, and we assume you have safe, caring training partners, the only reason you wouldn't do it is fear of failure. Well, if I'm going to go there, my move's not going to work. Well, how are you ever going to learn how to do that move unless you start making some mistakes with it? You gotta learn, and we have to learn slowly but surely. Some of us, I was in that category. Okay, I was really slow but sure. My students are much, much better at this, but they hear a good conversation early and often. You know, that's back to that culture we talked about of a martial arts school. When the culture, the professor, says play jiu-jitsu, and we're all like, okay, this is a laboratory out here. Well, if that's true, how do scientists come up with all their best stuff? Well, I'm not going to put that in that beaker. It's just going to blow up. Nothing would ever get figured out in this world.
Yes, sir.
That's why they're called experiments.
Yes.
So if we start looking at it that way, it's like, well, my martial arts, to get the right answers, there's going to have to be a bunch of, you know, experiments. You know, Professor's got a wonderful, you know, little funny phrase about that. He says, you know, these white jackets are our lab coats and this mat's our laboratory. And I just think that's a funny little cool way of saying, hey, you know, we're a bunch of scientists out here. That's what he says. You're a bunch of scientists. You're in the laboratory. You know, and it's a reminder that says, okay, let's experiment. Let's learn what not to do by doing things wrong.
Yes. Yeah. Brilliant. Yes, sir. I enjoy that. You earlier in this conversation, you had mentioned you know, your support system, and particularly from your wife. And of course, I've known you for many years back when you were a single person as well. And, you know, and we all know that I like to tell my students one of the big influences in my life was I think I went most of my life largely not having any fear of death whatsoever. It was just one of those things. And then, you know, there I am at the hospital and my daughter is born. And one of the things I used to always love to do, now my body doesn't handle it as well, but I used to love going on big roller coasters at Cedar Point. It's my favorite thing, right? And then like a weekend later, I've got this trip planned to Cedar Point. I'm getting on this roller coaster and the first time in my life, I'm afraid of a roller coaster.
Dynamics
change. Wow, what happens? But the action that I took was as soon as I got back from Cedar Point, I called my life insurance agent, took out a big gigantic life insurance policy, and then that's why I handled it. And it went away. Yeah. So, but my point is tell me a little bit about how having a family and how that changed you and what, you know, how it made you, your perspective of the world and even martial arts change because of the support system that you now enjoy and the close knit family.
Absolutely. I think any good parent would agree that, you know, when children come involved and family and wives or husbands and those types of things. And in my case, you know, I take this extra serious. It's like, I'm a leader, right? Like this is, as the man of this house, my job is this role. And I'm not trying to make that man or woman, right? It's just in my head, you know, the way I grew up, you know, the man of the house, you know, you got to take care of things, right? I'm not saying the woman can nor should not do that, right? My wife she's in a lot of ways the man of the house here, you know, and in many ways. But I am trying to say is, I have a responsibility, I guess is a better way of saying that. I have a responsibility in my mind of what I need to be and the type of person I need to be. Now, I fail miserably on it all the time, but that doesn't mean that my standard changed, right? Like I have a standard of what I feel a good leader should be for my family, for my martial arts school, for anybody I come in contact with. Like I have a responsibility. And that started profoundly when I had my first, you know, child, right? It's like, well, this person can't copy me. And all the cliches we all talk about when we first have our kids, well, that's true if you have the right soul to you, right? It's like, okay, that like the game has changed. Yes, I'm not just out here swimming by myself. I got a bunch of people following me wherever I'm swimming. So I'm going to have to be very clear on where and how and why I'm swimming there, you know, and that radically and profoundly helped my martial arts school get back to where it needed to be. Like I said, I ran a certain type of martial arts school forever, you know, a respect-driven style martial arts school. It's not that I didn't have a respect in my, you know, martial arts school, you know, when I was doing my fighting kind of days. It just was... it wasn't the same, and I didn't know how much it wasn't the same until I knew that. You know, once I started having my first son and then eventually my daughter, it's like, okay, you know, I need to put this together where I'm teaching what I feel a leader should be teaching. You know, and I was in my 20s.
Yes.
I felt I taught great martial arts technically, but I don't feel I taught great martial arts philosophically. And the reason is,
yes, sir,
I wasn't ready I wasn't a leader yet, therefore I couldn't be a leader. And to answer your question more poignantly, when you have a family, or at least in my case, I decided the kind of person I need to be, and I needed to have my whole life start reflecting that.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really incredible. And so you went through this transition. So you have probably all these tough guys. I've been there a couple of times. I remember when Mr. David came there, he had his first MMA bout. You helped him and trained him. You have all these tough guys that you're around.
Yeah, great.
Really
people.
Good guys too. Super people. And they're tough, and there's this kind of this atmosphere, and then there's a cage somewhere probably in the corner. Or maybe not in the corner, maybe right in the middle. I don't know. But the point is this is this atmosphere. So you've created this culture and you have this group of people. And the reason why I'm asking this question is that one of the things that Thiefel Brown says, and it's so true, he says, well, the number one reason that people, and they'll never tell you what it is, but the number one reason that people that could otherwise benefit from martial arts don't come into martial arts is because they're afraid of looking stupid.
1,000%.
So now you're the leader, right? You're the chief, and you have all of these Indians, and yet you have to say, guys, we're doing something different. So tell me a little bit about that. How did that all come about for you?
Think it was just like any relationship you have, things just morph, change, and the people that don't fit in your life anymore drift apart, and people that need to be in your life now get attracted. You know, I mean, for me, it was just I started going a certain direction, and, you know, that was who I was prior. I call it, I had a little hiatus, right? Like, you know, I had a little shift of gears where I thought I should be training and fighting in a certain way. And I created new friendships and there's a lot that came good at that, you know, Professor Sauer, you know, being obviously one of those. But as I had the quote-unquote little circle of life happen, and I wanted to keep all the amazing fighting skills that I was acquiring obviously intact and be able to share those, but I wanted to get back to what I knew was right in my heart, which was solid martial arts philosophy, the right type of atmosphere that would promote that, how people were going to train, walk, talk, and act culturally at the school. And just by nature of doing that, the people that didn't like it just stopped or went somewhere else or did something, trained with someone else or completely quit or whatever it would be. And then it was just a natural attrition. And then the new people that were coming to the school because they wanted those things that we were providing became the new student base. And it just became this phase in, phase out, you know, type of process, and I just had to be okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the things also from knowing you so closely, I would say one of your one of your greatest strengths is you really don't care very much about what other people think. And I've known that about you for before you made all this massive transition in your dojo and your life. That's just the way you've always been. So this might be a hard question for you to answer because, you know, sometimes it's kind of like you ask a skinny person how they're so good at losing weight.
Right.
You have no idea, right? So, but what would you say to somebody that's struggling a little bit? They're a little concerned about what other people think about them. Maybe they're thinking about doing martial arts, but maybe they went to a gym class when they were a kid. They couldn't do the same chin-ups that the other guys could do. Maybe they're a little out of shape. Maybe the guys at work might make fun of them. What would you tell somebody that is caught up in that world of, I'm concerned, I want to make a change? Because, you know, you think about it, a guy that's deciding he wants to, or a young woman who wants to do martial arts, and all of a sudden they're going to make this change, which means that they're going to step out of the group that they're currently in into a different group, and they're concerned about that.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts?
I would say that anytime... And we all have ego, right? Like, we all have a certain part of us that doesn't like if someone doesn't like us to some varying degree and this and that, right? Like, that's normal. it's normal to be interested in what other people think of you. And I'd be a liar if I said I was innocent of those things, but I can tell you this. When it comes to math, my life, not let me give you a minor decision. You know, my wife typically dresses me, right? She's very good at, she's got very good sense of fashion, you know, like she just does. Like, I think I'm putting on something that's really cool. All I have to do is walk and show her what I'm wearing. She'll just kind of snicker her nose. I'm like, okay, I need to change, you know? So it's like, I can have an ego there because it's something minor, you know? It's like, it's a pair of jeans I'm wearing or a shirt, right? Those are minor things. But when they're major, like, what do I stand for as a human? What is my martial arts school going to promote and stand for from a, you know, from a moral ground? No one's going to tell me what I'm doing if I know in my heart it's right. So I think that for anybody that needs to make a change is they have to know what's true to them. And that's not easy, and it takes time. And that spirals back to the first thing you said to me is, you know, what did you get out of that Tony Robbins stuff? It makes you think about how you think. You have to start. The first stepping stone is, why do I even think the way I do? Do I even think this way because I was influenced it? Did my parents think that way? And that's the way I think that way. So I think the first step I would tell anybody is you have to learn who you are and then continue to learn who you are. And that's why you do things like Tony Robbins and personal development, because you got to start to figure out what makes you tick. And you have to constantly keep evaluating it because it's really, really hard and it's a never ending journey. But once you start to scrape some layers through there and you start to figure out, well, what matters to you? You know, you can't change someone's convictions when it's in their heart. That, you know, like, you know, when people say, don't talk about religion and politics in public, you know, like that's taboo. Well,
right.
I feel it needs to be quote unquote taboo, because when someone believes in a religion, that's not superficial. Oh, I like black jeans compared to blue jeans. That's coming from their core. Those are moral convictions.
Right.
Many people, when they believe in their particular political views and this and that, the reason people will never agree and they argue and argue and they get frantic and make Facebook posts as long as their arm, right, is because it's coming from their core.
Right.
Like, it's in their soul that's how they feel about that situation. And so it's like, you know, if I'm coming from over here and you're coming from over there, we might as well just not have this, because we're going to end up throwing stuff on each other because,
right,
you know, we feel so strongly in an opposite kind of way. Right. So to that degree, once you know what you stand for, you can stand up for it.
Right. Well, and I also think, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, but I think that some of that need to post on Facebook and convince other people is because you really don't know it. Because if you really knew it, you wouldn't need to try and get the world to agree with you. But you're back into that realm of, well, I need other people to agree with me so that I can validate what I know. But once you know it, like Stephen Brown likes to say, he says, you know, are you a Democrat or a Republican? Or a Buddhist or a Christian or an atheist because your parents were? Because I bet you're not a very good one. If that's
self-discovery. You have to have a self-discovery. And to your point right there, Joe, I agree with that. And, you know, it's sometimes people have to make a post because they feel like they got to get it off their chest. And I respect that. Like, I respect they just need to speak their truth for a minute. And that's just what they need to do. And I get it. But I think the bulk of people need to have some kind of egotistical thing about it. And it's the same thing with fighting, right? You know, I can equate it to myself. You know, when I was in my fighter stage, you know, of my life, you know, and doing a lot of, you know, athletic style fighting, training super hard, it was all ego driven. You know, remember when I was talking about sparring and I have to beat you every sparring? That's because I want to feel good about me.
Right.
That's
yes,
my validation I socked you hard when we sparred and you couldn't hit me. That's my validation to me that I'm a tough guy. It's got nothing to do with you. To that same degree, when you're doing all this and that, you need validation for something that's missing. Because if you're a real tough guy, if you're a real fighter, you're quiet. You know, those are the people that scare me.
Right.
You know, if you get some guy that's, you know, do you ever tell you my analogy about the Chihuahua and the Rottweiler?
I don't remember, but if you did, I was just going to say, I think everybody would, I think maybe I actually have, but I think it would be very helpful.
Indulge me for a second. So here's the thing, and I've been the Chihuahua, and I consider myself a little more of a Rottweiler now, although sometimes my ego can play on me just like anybody. But here's the thing, the guy who thinks he's a tough guy, he's a Chihuahua. And now let me explain. You're walking down the road, maybe you're a mailman, you walk up in this yard, you're going to put the mail up on the porch, and there's this little teeny chihuahua, and he is bark, bark, barking, screaming at you. And you look at that little chihuahua, and you go, man, he is really going nuts barking. But he has to, because he's afraid of you. He has to scream and bark and growl and stand
right.
And but if you take two steps towards that thing, he's running. Now let's flip this around. Same situation. Yeah. You're the man when you're walking. You come up on that lawn. You see this big Rottweiler sitting on the lawn. He don't bark. He's just staring at you. Snickers his lip up a little bit. Maybe you see his hair is kind of poking on the back of his neck. Maybe he's got a little growl. Because all he's looking at you is lunch. He's like, go ahead. Step one more foot. Step it. You step that foot nine, sir, and I'm going to have me a bone. So that's the difference. It's like, you know, if you were in a street situation, you always have a chance of not fighting a guy who's bipping because he's a chihuahua. It's the guy that you say, hey, did you want to, you know, hey, man, why are you pushing on me? And the guy goes, well, do you just want to step outside? You might want to consider who you're stepping outside with when that guy says that casually, right? Because he knows he's a Rottweiler.
Yes.
He knows if you step in his yard, he's going to have a bone. So I think that that's a very poignant point of my way saying when people are screaming and barking, they want attention. And when they're quiet, they're confident because they know who they are.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's brilliant. I love it. And, you know, like we've all had this experience, you know, anybody that's been around martial arts for the longest of times, you know, some of the toughest people in the world are the easiest
look at all the Brazilians.
To get along with.
They're so calm, so cool, collected till you make the switch go. You're like, hey, brother, hey, amigo. Right, exactly. And then you flip their switch and then they're ready to kill you.
Yeah. And that's a concern that we face when we're teaching kids, you know, because a parent with being a great parent will often say, you know, I'm a little concerned because, you know, Johnny is has a little issue with self-control or whatever the case is. And now, you know, I'm going to teach him, you know, these skills on top of it. And it's like, but you don't know what begins to happen to that kid when he starts to believe in himself is sometimes just plain astonishing. And then, you know, getting back to that point we're making about people that want to impose their will on other people, or, you know, remember they're only doing that in the first place because they feel pretty weak about their will. And then you have another person that's opposing the person that's trying to impose their will. So somebody feels the need to try and convince somebody else of their belief. Well, it also expresses weakness to counter that in some way. It's kind of like, you know, just live and let live. And I love the analogy of the dogs because, you know, I can also imagine that big Rottweiler sort of sitting in the yard of the Chihuahua coming up.
Right.
The Rottweiler going,
but you're a mosquito,
whatever.
Bro.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Just whatever you have to say.
What's that old adage, you know, don't mistake my silence for weakness? So true. I would recommend anything by Jocko Willink. Former Navy SEAL commander, has wrote a couple books. He's a jiu-jitsu black belt. And the reason I would say that, Joe, is he talks a lot about leadership. I'm almost done with a second book that I have of his about leadership, but he talks a lot about that. And you want to think, let's imagine someone you think is like epitome of tough guy, not Clint Eastwood movie style tough guy, like real tough guy. So now you're thinking, here's this Navy SEAL, commander, jujitsu black belt, virtual assassin ninja. He's built like a freaking football player. And he's telling you his leadership style is, I'm not going to holler. I'm going to step back. I'm just going to kind of view the situation. I'm going to find the right way to communicate with this person. And you're like, this dude's got it figured out. No wonder he's such an incredible leader and still is. Because you can be. I love listening to his material because it's a reminder, especially to guys like myself who've grown up with it, getting this ego chip on the shoulder that you have to your point, when that heat starts coming back on you, we feel like we have to put the heat back or we're a sissy, right? Like, you're not going to get one up on me, dude. And I've had many of those in my life. And then you listen to Joshua Willings talk and go, look, dude.
Yes.
You screaming at the top of your lungs isn't necessary to prove that you're tough. And I love listening to this material for a multitude of reasons. For me personally, that's one of the number ones.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So just to kind of begin to wind up our conversation, it's just been so far just absolutely spectacular. I want to ask you a question a little bit about more of on a personal level. I'm a little unusual in the martial arts world, and I'll tell you the reason why is because I literally was raised in a dojo, and I've literally lived in a dojo for years at times. But I had, when I first started, I was in the dojo all day, every day for so long. And when I met one of my great teachers, one of the great influences in my life, was Sensei Trias. I got to travel with him and be in other countries and so on. But one of the things that was, he was very similar in that he lived in that dojo out in Arizona. But one of the things about him was he was a huge lover of life. And I think it was because, he had been through World War II. He had faced real life and death situations. So he was a very powerful karate practitioner, but he also, when he would meet people at an airport, he would want to know where they had traveled from, and he'd want to tell them the best place to go and who had the best food at what restaurant. He had this magnanimous personality, and the only reason why I say that is I see some of that in you. You are an enthusiastic person. You enjoy certain things that give you great pleasure. Tell us a little bit about you and how you have. Oh, and just the reason why I mentioned Osensei Trias, but he used to say this. He used to say, "A warrior knows how to die," right? And he would say, "And the way that you learn how to die is you have to learn how to live." And so I believe in living life to its fullest. That was his philosophy, and I really admired that. So I mentioned that because it reminds me of you a little bit. So I thought maybe you could tell us a little bit about what are some of the things that you enjoy that give you, of course, martial arts is at the top of that list. But if you could just tell us a little bit about what makes you tick as a person and what gives you the greatest amount of pleasure in your life.
Sure, I think that as I'm thinking this aloud in my head before I say it out loud, I feel that it's going to sound very cliche and cornball, but from my soul, it's true. What makes me happy? And it's like, that's a weird question for all of us. Like, what really does make us happy? Let me step back for a second. And I would say that, especially since all this stuff that happened, with the coronavirus and everything like that recently. And there's been many times over the past X amount of weeks where I felt unhappy. It's helped me realize what makes me happy, if that makes sense. And it's when I'm feeling unhappy, when I feel like I'm unproductive. And when I'm happy, I feel like I'm being productive. And so Yes, my children bring me wonderful joy. I love being around them and enjoying them. And I love being around my wife. She's my best friend. You know, I enjoy our time together. I enjoy my friends. I love martial arts, what it does for people. I love cars. That is my number one obsession other than martial arts. If I could drive cars all day, every day, and someone would pay me for it, I might have to teach martial arts on the side. But there's just something strange that I just love being in a car and driving a car. I don't know where that comes from. I just know that it brings me joy to just drive. So other than that, that would be just purely from I feel happy. I'm not sure why that makes me feel happy. I just know that it does. But with the exception of driving, cars or being in that kind of mode, I like feeling like I'm productive. I like feeling, and that's why martial arts makes me feel good. I feel like, yeah, I'm doing things. I feel like I'm accomplishing things. I feel like when I can share martial arts, I can share it with other people. I feel like when I'm in business, I feel like I'm heading somewhere and doing something. I don't like when I don't feel like I've accomplished anything. Like I couldn't, with quarantine, yes, and this and that and the other, the depression for me was I feel lazy. And I don't like, that makes me unhappy.
Yes, sir.
If I feel like I can contribute. And I'll finish with this thought. You know, Tony Robbins talks a lot about, you know, people's six, you know, human needs, right? Like things that they need to make them feel good. Like, what are some of them? They need to have where there's variety in their life, but they also have to feel like there's consistency, right? Like that, like there's crazy. That's not why we're crazy, right? And he makes the analogy about like a movie we like a movie we've seen 10 times. He says, well, yes, you watch it because you know it's good, but there's enough about it that you forgot that's uncertain, yes, and you like that too. So it's like we need certainty and uncertainty, yes, right? And the last human need he talks about, yes, that he says is the real secret. And at this stage of my life, I finally understand, even though it took me almost 25 years to figure out, is he says it's contribution. You know, when you can contribute, you That's have it. The most joy when you feel like you're giving back or giving to someone, you know. And I agree. And over the past few weeks, it's really, yes, helped me see that if I don't feel like I can contribute, if I don't feel like I'm doing my job as a father, as a breadwinner, as a husband, as a leader, if I don't feel like I can do those things, then who the heck am I? And I had to remind myself that I had to rewire. Well, how can I contribute just differently currently until I can contribute in the way that I need to? And so whenever I feel like I can contribute, I, yes, feel happy. Yes. That's my answer.
Yes, sir. And what a definition for being productive, contributing, whether it be to as simple as contributing to the, right, appearance of your bedroom by making your bed, or the appearance of, right, your face by shaving in the morning, by doing those things that add something to other people or the universe at large. And sir, by being on this call and giving us your words of wisdom and your thoughts, I mean, I think you've contributed mightily, and this call is going to be very productive for a lot of other people. And I just want to, again, express our deepest gratitude. I thought it's a wonderful interview, and these are the kind of conversations that have just endless
value.
Well,
it's my pleasure, Sensei.
Very, very grateful to you.
I look forward to more talks and future conversations. And one of these days, I will look forward to being at your dojo and sharing the martial arts the way we love it.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Ohio Martial Arts Mind Power. To get more information on Coach Jim Bundy, see the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening and have a great day.